All right, I can ask you a question.
Let me just say the death of Bernard Malamud is, of course, a very great shock to me as a longtime friend, editor, and publisher. I was talking to him only 10 days ago, and he spoke with great enthusiasm about his work on a novel he's been engaged in writing now for the past 2.5 or 3 years, a novel in which two of whose chapters he gave public readings, one at Lincoln Center, the Library of Performing Arts, and the other at the Y, 92nd Street Y. And of course he was very euphoric and very enthusiastic about the future, so his sudden death is a terrible shock to me, and of course a great loss to American letters. Whether the novel on which he has been working is completed or is complete enough for us to publish it in some form later on, as we certainly hope to do, remains to be seen. We have to, look at it first, of course.
The novel was not submitted to you as yet?
No, it wasn't completed, and he was simply, it was a work in progress. Fascinating theme. It was set in the 19th century, and it was a story of a Jewish peddler who has a horse and wagon, and who goes out to the far west and runs into a tribe of Indians, and he gets all involved with the American Indians. So it's a typical Malamud theme, a kind of Chaplin-esque, humorous, tragic or humorous pathos, you might say, but always the comic element underneath it all, and very interesting, both historically and sociologically and so on.
Can you give me your assessment of Malamud in terms of his standing in American letters?
Well, he certainly is one of the finest American writers we've had, and he really rates among the very top, it seems to me. And he thought of himself as an American writer. He liked to stress that word, and of course he was. He was born in Brooklyn. His very first novel was about baseball. It was The Natural, which Robert Redford made into a movie not too long ago. His second book, The Assistant, which I also published at this firm. I published The Natural at Hawkett Bass. I was a young editor there back in the 50s when he wrote that. The Assistant is a novel with a Jewish background, but it's Brooklyn. It's set in a grocery store, and it's really the story of his father. His father had a small grocery store in Brooklyn. He grew up, his parents were immigrants from Russia. He grew up in America, and that's the theme. There's also an Italian assistant who works in the store. Back when we published that book, Farrar, Straus & Drew published it about 1957. We had a call from Frank Sinatra, who wanted to make a movie of it, and I was always sorry that he never did. He wanted to play Frank Arpino, the Italian assistant in the grocery store. It would have made a good movie, it seems to me. It may still. Perhaps he owns the rights. I don't even know.
I've been collecting a number of wire service obituaries of Bernard Malamud, and almost all of them refer to Malamud as a Jewish writer. Can you comment on this assessment? Is that accurate?
Well, yes, he is. He is Jewish, and was very much involved in that theme. His parents were Russian Jews who came to America, but of course his whole ethos here was American. I mean, you can't. I don't know that being a Jewish writer has anything to do with baseball. I don't quite know what it means. I mean, it's like saying an Irish writer. I can't think of any Irish writers in America, but, say writers of Irish parentage who live here grow up as American writers, and he felt that he was an American writer.
Yeah, but we associate certain writers with Jewish themes. Malamud included Bellow, Roth. Mailer is Jewish, but we don't consider Mailer a Jewish writer. So I guess it's not unfair to refer to Malamud with the predominance of Jewish themes in his work as a Jewish writer.
It's not unfair, but it doesn't really define what he did. Nothing unfair about it. He is clearly Jewish, and as a matter of fact, one novel, The Fixer, is thoroughly thoroughly deals with that theme, the theme of anti-Semitism in Russia. It has to do with his story his father told him of the Bayless case, I think it was called, of a Jew who's who was accused of a ritual murder, I think it was. And it was a famous, an actual case, historical case. But that's the only novel he wrote in, that I know of that is, you know, can be said to be, you know, wholly so. And it's historical. He wrote another novel called A New Life. I happen to think it's one of his best books. It has nothing to do with anything except the state of Oregon. And it came out of the fact that he taught at the State University in Oregon. He was there for 8 or 9 years, and it came out of that theme. And it's completely, you know, West Coast. And the other novel I can think of that perhaps, The Tenants. The Tenants has to do with living in a New York apartment. It has to do with the black theme. Is about a white writer who's writing a novel in this rundown apartment, slum kind of apartment, and he discovers another writer living in the same apartment, working with a black writer who hates all whites. So you might say that's a theme about the black problem. But he didn't really write in what I think of as label terms, you know, pinning labels on subjects. He wrote about human beings, and these problems affect characters as human beings. He was tremendously interested in human character, whatever the historical or ethnic or, you know, accidental background. And he had a great sense of, a very old-fashioned word, but it was absolutely true, morality. He had a strong sense of morality, that is to say, the correctness of behavior of one person to another person, whether Jewish or Irish or black or whatever. That's a deep issue in all his books, it seems to me. It even works in the baseball novel.
Mr. Drew, you had a long-time professional relationship with Bernard Melamud, but what sort of personal relationship did you have with him? What kind of man was he personally?
He was a great friend. He was a very gentle person, I would say, you know, a gentleman in the nicest sense of the word. He was self-effacing. He kept in the background, unlike many other writers. He wasn't interested in asserting himself or putting himself forward. So he was a good friend, a very warm and affectionate person. He was a very good family man, loved his son and his daughter and his wife. He lived, of course, he had a house in Bennington, old Bennington. He taught at Bennington College for many, many years. He has been on the faculty there for over 10 years, I think. But he also had an apartment here in New York on the west side, near Lincoln Center. But he was fun to talk to, very, very lively, very intelligent and incisive, very witty, had a great sense of humor, and we used to visit each other constantly. But he didn't socialize in the way that many writers do. You know, he didn't look for the limelight, or he really wasn't interested in it. He
wasn't a backslapping drinker.
No, he was very quiet. He was a quiet man, and wrote every day. He was a very very hard worker. He was at his desk every day. I saw his studies both in Bennington, his working rooms, so to speak, and in New York, and they were always set up, you know, very orderly and very methodical. And he was a very meticulous writer. He didn't publish as much as many other writers because he was tougher in a self-critical sense. He was tough on his own work. He wouldn't show me anything until he had a third or fourth draft that he was, you know, reasonably satisfied with. Some writers just rush to you with the first thing off the typewriter. They're very anxious to get a reaction. Not with him. He was very very cautious, very very harsh on his own production, very tough on himself. And he would follow this through right up, you know, in every stage of the publishing process. He would go over the manuscript with a very, very fine comb, so to speak. Then he'd get into galley proofs. He'd start working on that. I would think a sentence was perfect, or a paragraph or a page, but he'd find something.
He once, one of his books, I guess The Fixer, was banned by a school board on Long Island, the Island Trees School Board. Did he have any reaction to that?
Well, he was very stoical and very, what shall I say, mature about just things. You know, these idiots in libraries who were trying to suppress, as if you can suppress literature, they'd suppress the Bible. The Bible is terribly pornographic if you look at it in a certain light, and why not suppress the Bible? No, these people are gadflies and, you know, a pain in the neck to everybody, and he didn't take it too seriously. It's, of course, a scandal that they should do such a thing. But, no, he took it philosophically, and, of course, it has had no effect. The Fixer is certainly read all over the country and all over the world, as a matter of fact, in translation. No, he was very sophisticated about that, wisely enough. He was very sophisticated about movies. A couple of his stories and works were you know, bought by the movies, and he knew he wasn't a movie writer. He wasn't working in that medium. It's a completely different medium from books, from writing, and he thought, let them do what they will, you know, I'll leave it to them. I'm not going to try to do this. He was asked to do the script of The Natural, for example, and he had the good sense not to try to do it. Some writers have the capacity to do scripts, but it's a dramatic gift. But it isn't necessarily the fiction gift.
Was he pleased with the way Redford dealt with The Natural?
I think he was, on the whole, you know. But again, he would be slightly, what shall I say, ironical about it. You know, it could have been a disaster. But it wasn't a disaster. I thought it was a pretty good movie myself, as a matter of fact. No, Redford, I think, was a good director and person to do that one. But he had other movies, which The Fixer was made into a movie. I don't think that was successful at all, and neither did he. But he didn't complain. He didn't blame the movie people. That was their approach to it, and, you know, too bad it wasn't better than it was.
About a possible fund.
Yes, the Malamud family have established a Bernard Malamud Memorial Fund in his memory, which will make some kind of literary award. The precise nature of it hasn't yet been determined, whether it will be just novelists or whether it will be nonfiction. That sort of thing has not yet been decided. But it is going to be a memorial fund for writers, to help writers financially, and it's going to be administered through PEN, the Pen Club. Malamud, as you know, was the Norman Mailer's predecessor as president of the Pen Club. He was president up to a few years ago, and Norman Mailer succeeded him. So it seemed very appropriate for the Pen to administer the paperwork on this. And friends of Malamud or admirers of Malamud who want to make a contribution to this memorial fund should send their checks to Penn, but make them out to the Bernard Malamud Memorial Fund to help writers, and young writers, future writers. This is in his name, as in the memory of Bernard Malamud.